It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Washington alarmed over pending Russian air defense missile sale to Iran. Russia's decision to lift the ban on its sale of sophisticated air defense missile systems to Iran has caught the attention of Washington. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf says Secretary of State John Kerry discussed the matter with his Russian counterpart Monday.
The secretary raised those concerns in a call with Foreign Minister Lavrov this morning. We don't believe it's constructive at this time for Russia to move forward with this, but we've worked very closely with the Russians on the P5+1 negotiations. We don't think this will, have an impact on unity in terms of inside the negotiating room, so they did discuss it.
Mr. Lavrov said given the progress reached between Iran and the six world powers in nuclear talks, the rationale for the international embargo on supplying Tehran with the S-300s and Russia's own ban had completely disappeared. Representatives of Libya's rival governments met under UN mediation Monday in Algiers in a bid to end nearly 4 years of chaos and violence. It was a second round of talks aimed at a transition government. Bernardino Leon, special UN envoy, spoke about the importance of success at the talks.
To try to send a very strong message that no more Libyans should be killed. No more Libyans should lose their lives because there must be a possibility for all Libyans to live together.
The violence that has persisted in Libya since the 2011 ouster of longtime leader Muammar Gaddafi erupted again Monday with a bomb explosion outside the Moroccan embassy. The bombing came hours after gunmen opened fire on the South Korean embassy compound, killing two Libyan guards and wounding a third person. Islamic State militants claim responsibility for both attacks. This is VOA News. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi meets President Obama at the White House Tuesday, trying to convince him to give his country more air support and billions in new arms shipments to fight Islamic State militants. Before departing Iraq Monday, he said both the U.S. and Iran are helping Baghdad confront the IS threat, called his relationship with Tehran balanced.
Iran is providing us with help and support because this is in the national interest of Iran. Daesh is a threat to the national interest of Iraq and to the national interest of Iran and to the national interest of the whole region. So Iran is helping us, and we say thank you to Iran. We say thank you to all countries who provide us with this support and this help. We are not prepared to act on behalf of others against our neighboring countries.
Iraqi forces with U.S.-led coalition support and the backing of Iranian-led militia have succeeded in recent weeks in retaking substantial territory from IS fighters. Sparse voting occurred Monday on the first of 3 days of balloting in Sudan's national and state elections, boycotted by the opposition and expected to extend the long rule of President Omar al-Bashir and his National Congress Party. Mr. Bashir, wanted by the International Criminal Court on war crimes charges, has been in power since 1989 and won a 2010 vote the opposition alleged was rigged. Results from Nigeria's state elections show a solid swing to the party of President-elect Muhammadu Buhari, with his All Progressives Congress capturing about two-thirds of the 36 states. Meanwhile, those demanding return to more than 200 schoolgirls abducted by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram a year ago Monday held a silent march in the capital Abuja. Aisha Yusufu was among them.
We ought to have protected them. We failed them. Each and every one of us, we failed them. And the next best thing that we ought to have done is to have rescued them. And up till now, we have not done that. And that's a shame for this country and the world as a large. We have a day set aside for the girl child. We tell the girl child how important she is. She should dare to dream. She should go to school. And the girl child will realize today that it's all a lie, it's all a sham. Because the Chibok girls, they dare to be educated. And what have they gotten? They've been abducted for 364 days. And we've known nothing.
President-elect Buhari and his administration will do everything he said in its power to rescue the girls taken from their school in the Borno state town of Chibok. Russia and Ukraine agreed Monday to pull back small-caliber weapons from the front lines in eastern Ukraine and continue withdrawing heavy weapons. Despite a surge in violence over the past several days, the ceasefire between Ukraine and Russian-backed separatists is generally holding. The Italian Coast Guard Monday discovered 9 bodies as it sought to rescue dozens of migrants in waters off the Libyan coast. Good weather is encouraging migrants from Africa and the Middle East to take to boats in a desperate journey for a better life in Europe. The African Union and the U.S. Monday signed an agreement to create the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's ruling PDP party accuses the Electoral Commission and security agencies of cheating in last Saturday's gubernatorial election.
There's been an overzealousness on the part of security agencies in Nigeria and the INEC officials to please the winners of the presidential election.
Olisa Metu is National Publicity Secretary of the ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. Guinea denies its security forces Monday fired at opposition protesters. Human rights groups urge the DRC government to free detained pro-democracy activists. And Sierra Leone bans pregnant girls ahead of Ebola schools reopening.
It is an immigrant issue because when you look at the Education Act of 2004, it makes it very, very clear, says that on no account should any child be discriminated against. This is a serious provision which we want government to look at.
Solomon Sobani is director of Amnesty International in Sierra Leone. Xenophobia on the rise in South Africa. We'll speak with a provincial government official in Durban. And World Bank and IMF official meet in Washington. Those stories plus Mark Overman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party is accusing the Independent National Election Commission, INEC, of colluding with security agencies in deciding last Saturday's gubernatorial elections in some PDP strongholds in favor of the opposition All Progressive Congress Party, the APC. Olisa Metu, National Publicity Secretary of the PDP, says INEC officials and security agencies aided APC supporters in Abia, Imo, Plateau and Zamfara states to decide the results in favor of the APC. INEC officials were not immediately available for comment. Metu denies that the gubernatorial election results are an indication of Nigerian voters rejecting what the APC called bad governance and insecurity under President Goodluck Jonathan.
There's been an overzealousness on the part of security agencies in Nigeria and the INEC officials to please the winners of the presidential election. Whether they are doing this because they want to retain their jobs or they are doing this because they are being threatened to, that is a million-dollar question. But for us, we are greatly appalled that having been in power for 16 years and sustained democracy, the whole thing has been lost in this last gubernatorial election just because of the eagerness and the zeal of the security agencies and the INEC officials to please the winners of the presidential election.
I don't know if I understand correctly, but your party is in power right now. Are you saying the security people has something to do with the results of the election or the Nigerian people rejected your party?
No. Listen, we lost the presidential election narrowly. If you remove two states, Kano and Katsina, we won the presidential election. But we accepted, our president conceded, irrespective of the irregularities. But that's not what we are saying. In a state like Imo State, we've seen brazen rigging by the APC. The security agencies have aided them. Even INEC officials have aided them. And votes are being turned. When things are done in the local area, it's overturned. We've seen a new brand of politics where INEC has decided in Zamfara, in Plateau, in Abia, in every other state, to reject the elections in the PDP strongholds, while the results from the APC strongholds have been upheld.
We spoke to an official of the APC, the opposition party that won, saying that Nigerian people rejected bad governance. I mean, blaming your party for bad governance and also for insecurity. Do you think the people rejected bad governance?
Let us forget about that argument. In a state like Plateau State, we won the presidential elections. It came to gubernatorial elections. INEC manipulated the results, and then APC won. In a place like Imo State, we returned the three senatorial candidates. We returned 8 out of 9 House of Reps members. Then it came to gubernatorial elections. Then pickers have been banded and changed. Is that democracy? Is that rejection by the Nigerian people? No, that's rejection by the powers that be, the new powers, the new lords of the manor. In Nigeria, the security agencies, the INEC officials, are in so much of a hurry to please the government that is coming in.
Did the PDP complain to INEC about what you're saying?
Yes, we complained to INEC. Complained in Abia State, they promised that they reversed the local government only for today, for them to turn and disallow some other local governments again, different from the ones that complained against. Something unique that this INEC has introduced in Nigerian politics, inconclusive election. We now have it in about 3 or 4 states. Inconclusive. What's this inconclusive election? Every election is inconclusive. Is it magic? Is it trading? Is it buying and selling?
Olisa Amentu is National Publicity Secretary of the Ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Abuja. A Guinean government official has denied that security forces on Monday fired at opposition supporters protesting against the country's announced election timetable. Reports say about 6 people were shot and wounded. Guinea's Electoral Commission announced that presidential election be held on October 11 this year. But the opposition said that decision broke a 2013 agreement which calls for local elections before presidential. Mustapha Naite, Guinea's Minister of Youth and Employment, says it is the opposition that must be blamed for holding protests without first seeking permission from authorities.
First, it was a march or a protestation that was not authorized by the government. No letter was sent because in any democratic country, if you want to walk, you are forced to inform the government and then to seek for authorization. Once the authorization is given to you, then you can walk. In this case in hand, at no time the opposition sent a letter to say that they want to manifest, that they want to walk. So at this point of time, there is no report in our hand saying that the government or the police has fired on the people that were protesting.
But Mr. Naite, were there shot fire at the demonstrators?
We heard there were shot fires, but that those shot fires could come from anyone because there was no legal and authorized march. No one. I believe in the United States or anywhere in the world, if people want to manifest a walk, they sent a letter for authorization. In this case, in end, we don't know who was marching. You have people just going out there and then throwing stones at the population or at the police officers. So no one can say right now that it was the police that fired the gun. No one can tell you that.
As you know, Mr. Naite, the opposition has been demonstrating, organized these demonstrations against the timetable of the elections in Guinea. What do you have to say to that?
Well, James, I would like to ask a question. I think in any democratic country, if the opposition wants to do a march or demonstrate, they must seek for authorization, and which must be given to them. But if the authorization is not granted or it has not even been seeked after, what do you say to that?
That is well said. I'm saying the timetable of the election, the opposition disagreed on that. What does your government have to say?
We agree to disagree that the timetable is a point of a disagreement between the opposition and the government. But the question in hand that I'm asking now is that in which country in the world, in a democratic country, the opposition can decide that they want to demonstrate and they will do the manifestation on the street without even informing the government in hand so that the government can provide them real protection. The responsibility here is on the head and shoulders of the opposition.
Your electoral commission wants presidential elections to be held in October. The opposition is saying that local elections should be held before that. That's the point of disagreement.
That's one of the points of disagreement, but what I'm saying is that we have the Electoral Commission that is totally independent. Together, we elected those commissioners to conduct the Electoral Commission.
Mustapha Naite is Guinea's Minister of Youth and Employment. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. As Sierra Leone prepares to reopen its schools closed since last year due to the worst Ebola outbreak in history, the government has announced a ban on pregnant girls attending class because it says they set a bad example. Nina De Vries has more on this story from Freetown.
The director of Amnesty International in Sierra Leone, Solomon Sugbandi, is concerned about the government's policy. Sugbandi says not allowing girls into classes is a violation of their human rights.
It is an immoral issue because when you look at the Education Act of 2004, it makes it very, very clear, says that on no account should any child be discriminated against. This is a serious provision which we want government to look at.
The ban on pregnant girls in class is not new. It has been in place since 2010. But Sugbandi says the government should make an exception because of the Ebola crisis and the impact it's had on young women. He says there's been an increase in sexual violence and unwanted teenage pregnancies during Ebola.
But the fact of the matter is the situation is a bit abnormal. It's not of their own making. There have been no effective teaching and learning situation due to the fact that the Ebola disease has, put its halt on all practices as well as every activity that people should undertake.
As schools set to open Tuesday, girls like Aizatu Banke have no choice but to stay back.
I know they feel fine. I feel bad. Guys, now, like, where you go school?
The 17-year-old explains in her native Creole dialect that she can't go to school because of her pregnancy and is not happy. She doesn't like the policy and wants to join her friends in class.
You want to go school? Now you force me. Forgive me, belly.
Aizatu says she was raped by a fellow student. He forced her to have sex while she was fetching water for her family. She's hoping the government will make an exception for girls like her. But Ministry of Education, Science and Technology Public Relations Officer Brima Michael Touré says the government will not change its policy. He says even if they made an exception for pregnant girls, chances are they wouldn't attend. There's a great shame when a girl becomes pregnant in Sierra Leone's culture, he says, and much of the time the family tries to hide it.
They will isolate the child. They wouldn't want the neighbors to know that that child was in the home and she got pregnant while she's still under their care. They would take the child somewhere, to a family member somewhere. The child would, that girl would deliver the child, and then they would send her back to that home, and no one would ever know they had a child.
He also said that with vomiting being an Ebola symptom as well as a common side effect of pregnancy, the girls are better off to be at home. That way, there's no fear of a suspected Ebola case and an increase for panic among students and teachers. Turi adds that the ministry will consider alternative options for pregnant girls if suggestions are made, but at this point, there will be no exceptions. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 14th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. West African civil society and human rights groups say the Democratic Republic of Congo has kept at least 8 pro-democracy activists in secret detention for almost a month. The group told reporters in Dakar on Monday that the Congolese activists must either be formally charged before a judge or immediately released. Viewers and Look has the story.
Several dozen people were arrested in mid-March in Kinshasa and Goma in connection with a pro-democracy youth workshop in the capital. Some were released, but human rights group Amnesty International says others are still detained with no access to lawyers or family. No charges have been filed. At the time of the arrest, the government accused them of conspiring to, quote, destabilize the country. Amnesty Senegal director Sadi Gassama says that accusation is, quote, ridiculous and unfounded. USAID was a sponsor of the event in March, he says, and the government was invited.
Vous savez, la dictature, l'oppression, les atteintes aux libertés ne doivent plus être une fatalité en Afrique.
He says Africans should no longer accept this kind of oppression as an inevitability. In the case of the DRC, he says it is the freedom of expression and the freedom of assembly that are being challenged. Those are fundamental freedoms, he says, without which there is no democracy. In intimidating and arresting these youth, he says the state wants to snuff out this hope that is emerging. Senegalese and regional civil society groups say the government of the DRC is trying to squash dissent ahead of the 2016 elections. Efforts by the ruling party to amend electoral law in January turned deadly as Congolese took to the streets to protest a provision requiring a new census that would have effectively pushed back the vote by several years and allowed President Joseph Kabila to stay in power. He has been in office for 14 years. Rights groups say at least 40 people were killed during the protests and hundreds detained. The Senate removed the provision. West African rights group Article 19 says the DRC government sought to cut off information, including blocking internet, phone, and SMS services like Viber from January 12th to February 19th.
They tend to block all the means of communication, Viber and the services SMS internet.
What they were trying to control, says Hadi Diallo of Article 19, were spontaneous demonstrations and calls to action going out on social media. Senegalese and Burkinabe pro-democracy activists were arrested alongside their Congolese counterparts at the workshop in March. They had been invited to participate. They were later released and expelled from the DRC. Civil society groups say they are launching a series of actions to campaign for the Congolese activists' release, including filing complaints with international human rights authorities and holding demonstrations outside DRC diplomatic missions around the region at the end of the month. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
The situation in Durban, South Africa, was tense on Monday after the port city was hit by violence directed against foreigners living there. Thousands of foreign nationals from Zimbabwe, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, and Somalia have been displaced following the xenophobic attacks. Provincial government communications head Tami Ngwenya says the situation was tense but now stable.
The situation, I mean, is relatively calm, and we are engaging with the various communities that have been affected. And there will be, a solidarity march that will be led by the Premier on Thursday, involving religious leaders, community leaders, members from the friendly nations that are affected. That will be sending, that message to the world that we are against any acts of violence that are associated with xenophobia.
But according to your own investigations, what seems to be the problem here? Why is it that some South Africans are bitter?
I think at this stage, all that we know is that there was a dispute that had happened at the workplace, then it took a different turn. But the police, maintaining law and order and are involved in dealing with these issues. Government have sent several strong messages to say that as South Africa, we subscribe to our obligations under the UN, various UN conventions, as well as the Constitutive Act of the AU, where we uphold the issues of human rights, our obligations to promote human rights, to protect human rights, and to fulfill human rights, which applies not only to members or citizens of South Africa, but to everyone that is within our borders.
Tami Ngwenya is head of provincial government communications in Durban, South Africa. You're speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. Top central bank and financial officials from nearly 200 nations are in Washington for World Bank and International Monetary Fund meetings that will focus on speeding up economic growth, creating jobs, and avoiding political bickering. As viewer Jim Randall reports, new studies show the pace of global growth is frustratingly slow.
Even with falling oil prices and strong U.S. growth, the head of the International Monetary Fund says the global economy only expanded around 3.4% last year. Well, that's near the average growth over the last couple of decades. IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde says growth is uneven and too slow.
Given the lingering impact of the Great Recession on people, it is actually generating hardship for many people around the world, including those countries where more than 50% of the youth population goes unemployed. So growth is not good enough.
Lagarde urged nations to take advantage of lower oil prices to cut energy subsidies and use the saved money on education to boost long-term economic growth. The IMF chief says progress on trade agreements could also help growth and employment, while better access to credit could help small businesses hire more people. And she called for more investment in infrastructure to provide jobs in the short term and bolster growth in the long term by facilitating commerce. Improved infrastructure is also the focus of the new Chinese-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. Some analysts see it as a rival to the IMF and World Bank, which critics say are unfairly dominated by Western nations. World Bank President Jim Yong Kim is urging the new bank to adhere to high standards for dealing with environmental and labor issues.
Poverty is 2.5 billion people not having access to financial services like bank accounts. Poverty is 1.4 billion people without access to electricity. Poverty is having to put your children to bed at night without food. And poverty is not going to school because, in order to survive, everyone in the family needs to make a few cents every day.
He also says nearly 1 billion people around the world struggle to survive on less than $1.25 a day. He pledges to closely work with the new bank because, as he says, the enemy is poverty, not other institutions. World Bank critics say the global lender would fight poverty more effectively if it speeded up efforts to reform its large bureaucracy and improved safeguards for people and environments affected by bank projects. Top World Bank and IMF officials will be discussing these and other complex issues this week with financial and bank officials from member nations around the world as they gather here in Washington. Jim Randall, VOA News, Washington.
25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Defending champions Cameroon edged Ethiopia 2-1 in the return leg of their Women's All-Africa Games qualifiers in Yaoundé over the weekend. Cameroon prevailed on a 4-2 aggregate. Nigeria beat Mali 9-1 on aggregate. Tanzania pipped Zambia 6-5. Egypt edged Senegal 2-1. South Africa beat Botswana 6-0 as Ghana edged Zimbabwe 4-3. Consequently, hosts Republic of Congo, Cameroon, Egypt, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, South Africa, and Tanzania qualify for the women's football event at the Games. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe held their hosts Cameroon to a 1-1 draw in the return leg of their men's All-Africa Games qualifier in Yaoundé. Zimbabwe carried the day with a 2-1 aggregate. Egypt outplayed Burundi 4-0. Sudan edged South Africa 2-1. As Nigeria pipped Zambia 2-1. Senegal and Mali tied 3-3 on aggregate. However, Senegal advanced on their away goal rule. As a result, hosts Republic of Congo will be joined by Burkina Faso, Egypt, Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal, Sudan, and Zimbabwe in the men's football at the Games. In athletics, Africa junior hammer throw silver medalist Tsepang Makete prevailed with a throw of 74.12 meters at the South Africa Junior Championships in Mangaung over the weekend. He says this is a fitting way to end his years as a junior athlete.
I enjoyed every bit of it. It was very fun. And I also have to thank my coach for being here, to thank the officials for the wonderful job they did, and especially to the other athletes that made the competition very, very enjoyable.
Now, you just came off the Africa Championship. Did it meet your expectation, the silver medal?
We went to the Africa Juniors expecting a gold because the rankings kind of put me on first place. So it was a matter of now going there and show it that I'm worthy of the first place, and things didn't really work out the way we planned it.
Well, you didn't come back empty-handed. Which is good. Second best may not have been what you had wanted. But now it's bye-bye to juniors. From now on, you're going to be with the big boys, and it's going to be a heavier hammer throw implement. Are you afraid of competing with the seniors?
I've had a few runs with the seniors. Last year at the SA Seniors in Pretoria, we came back with a silver medal, a personal best of 65.60 meters. It's a bit of experience that I got last year. So this year, we're just working on getting it further and seeing where we come up with the seniors this year.
That was South Africa's Tsepang Makete, the Africa Junior Hammer Throw Silver Medalist, speaking in Mangaung, Free State Province in South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's president-elect Muhammadu Buhari says his administration will do everything in his power to rescue more than 200 girls captured by Islamic militants 1 year ago. On the anniversary of the kidnapping, Mr. Buhari criticized the current government's efforts to find the girls, saying his administration will act differently from the government that he replaces. He said on the day he takes office, Boko Haram militants will know the strength of our collective will. Mr. Buhari won recent elections in part by promising to do more to fight the Islamic militants. National elections began Monday in Sudan, with voters sure to give a new term to President Omar al-Bashir and a victory to his National Congress Party because of a boycott by the country's main opposition parties. Mr. Bashir, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court on war crimes charges, has been in power since 1989. That's it for this Tuesday, April 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Tony Harris, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a great day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, combating terrorism across the continent. From the Al-Shabaab militant massacre of nearly 100 university students in Kenya to the kidnapping of 600 schoolgirls by Boko Haram. Is Africa's war on terrorism winnable? That's next time, right here on VOA Africa.
from